Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
All good things must come to an end, but not us, not the Album Nerds Podcast. We take the punches and keep moving forward. I'm Dude, I got Don with me. So Don, there have been some shakeups around the show recently.
It's true. Still missing someone.
Yes, me too. Andy will rejoin us. He is still on his safari of musical discovery, so look forward to him rejoining. Unlike our topic today, which is final albums where bands or artists are done with their recording. So we've got a great show coming up for you. Each of us are going to present a final album, and we'll get into the reasons and all that stuff in those discussions. Don is going to ask us a deep question, and then we will talk about some other albums and album-related items we're digging. And of course, we will spin the wheel of musical discovery to find out what kind of albums we're going to talk about on the next episode. But today, it's final.
That's what I'm talking about!
Well, a recording career is unfortunately always finite. The swan songs of bands and solo artists are often forgettable, but sometimes they serve as capstones, further cementing great legacies. Today, both of us will present artists' final albums.
This was surprisingly difficult because a lot of times, especially in today's music world, a lot of bands are maybe still recording past their peak,
yep.
And it's more fan service than finest work.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we kind of had to lean on unfortunate things happening, someone passing away or a band breaking up at their peak, that kind of thing. So, Don, what stuff were you thinking about for this that didn't make the cut for one reason or another?
Well, the first one and the most obvious pick for me would have been the Beatles' Abbey Road.
Of course, me too.
I mean, we've done a lot of Beatles, so you know we could probably wait on that, but I'm sure we'll get around to Abbey Road.
And it might be a one album show. Yeah. I mean, not try and squeeze it into one of these.
Yeah, and then another one we're not going to do because we just did it not too long ago is David Bowie's Black Star, which came out in 2016, and that one was released just days before his death. But you can check that out on episode 250. It's also a resident of the Album Nerds Hall of Fame.
Indeed it is. So for me, this one's tiptoeing on a line that if Andy were here, would have definitely been shut down because he likes to follow the rules. I was thinking about AC/DC's Highway to Hell, released in 1979. Hard rock classic, kind of their raw sound at their peak. And it was the final album to feature the legendary lead singer Bon Scott before his untimely death. And then they went on to be very successful with Brian Johnson. So AC/DC's still making records. Is it a final album?
Yeah, that would have received the Andy veto, I think.
I think so. He keeps us honest around here. That would have, you know, I just want to talk about that record. The next one I was strongly considering was Johnny Cash's American Four, The Man Comes Around, released in 2002. Deeply reflective and poignant, his last album recorded and released in his lifetime. They took some songs that he had been working on for another album and released another one, but this in my book is his last album, mostly famous for his haunting rendition of Nine Inch Nails' Hurt, but it's pretty intense.
Great album. I love the first cut, the title track, the Man Comes Around. It's like all the lyrics are right out of Revelation. That's cool.
Yeah. I wanted something a little peppier for today. So why don't we get into our actual choices?
You choose me?
So my pick for a final album is Ain't That Good News by Sam Cooke, released in February 1964. It's the 11th, and as I said, final studio album by singer-songwriter Sam Cooke, born Samuel Cooke in Clarksdale, Mississippi in 1931.
Is it necessary to tell us what he's born if it's just long for Sam?
The interesting point about that is, or his born last name has no E in it.
Oh, that is fascinating. What the hell?
Sam Cooke is known as the King of Soul. We've had a few kings on the show, King of Rock and Roll, King of Pop. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's another one in there.
King of the Nighttime World.
Oh, okay.
That's Kiss. That was one of those.
Oh, really? So Cook only recorded for 8 years before his death in 1964, but he actually charted 29 singles in the United States.
And he was 33 when he died,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
God.
Let's start listening. This is a famous cut, A Change Is Gonna Come.
It's been a long time coming, but I know.
Beautiful song. It's as powerful today as it was then. Mm-hmm. Maybe more so, just, you know, because of its longevity.
Yep. And plus, the performance is, you know, really fantastic. So that actually, that begins the side two of the album, which is kind of the quiet side of the album. But A Change Is Gonna Come, written by Cook, is inspired by various events in his life, most prominently when he and his entourage were turned away from a whites-only motel in Louisiana. So he felt compelled to write a song that spoke to his struggles and the people around him. And, you know, this became kind of a civil rights anthem.
It's shocking to me that stuff, like to that degree, there's still obviously people being unkind to one another because of race and other things, but that was like legal stuff within the lifetime of like my parents and your parents, that they were little kids when this stuff was still happening like that. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and the story is even worse because they not only do they get turned away from the hotel, when they go to the next hotel, they actually get arrested for kind of carrying on, you know, putting up a fight when they got rejected from the other. So terrible.
Jeez.
But the song also kind of drew inspiration from Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. Mm. You have strings arranged by Renee Hall. So we've seen this happen before with other artists, but Cook had just signed a new contract with RCA, and he had more freedom and creative control than ever before. So he was choosing all the material, writing most of the songs, and he got to choose all the musicians.
And he owned the rights, right? The publishing rights and everything? Yeah.
Yep. So he was an innovator.
Yeah, I think I read that he was one of the first black performers to have the muscle to be able to actually get that done. Yeah, I think that's one of his big accomplishments, I think, making headway in the music industry.
Well, let's hear another cut. This is the opening cut and title track, Ain't That Good News.
Tomorrow. Ain't that news, man, ain't that news. I got a letter just the other day.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously the mood at the beginning is a little different from later. So that first half of the record is more upbeat R&B cuts like this. And the second side is ballads and kind of more standard sounding songs.
Yeah, that song, though, you know, that easily in that same time period could have been arranged as a country song of what country music sounded like then. I love how brave he was really in kind of meandering into different styles throughout the course of this album and not allowing himself to be pigeonholed to one particular sound.
Yeah. In fact, this was kind of an adaptation of an older gospel song by the same name. But yeah, so, you know, he's kind of dipping into several different genres. This actually happened to be the first piece of new material that he recorded. This is just 6 months after the death of his 18-month-old son, who drowned in a swimming pool.
It was a rough period towards the end of his life and career.
Yeah. So his son dies, and then he records this album, and then, you know, not long after the release of this album, you know, Cook himself, lost his life. Some sort of disagreement with a hotel manager.
Yeah. Yeah, stuff escalated. You don't know, especially that period of time, the news, any news that came out probably would have been slanted in a particular direction rather than, you know, like today having all these, well, five different versions of the same story. So,
yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, because he, you know, clearly was in, you know, kind of a dark and destructive place in his life. But you have this album, you know, that's kind of full of hope and joy. But anyway, my clickbait headline for Ain't That Good News is Versatile Cook Serves His Final Tasty Dish of Inspiring R&B and Soul.
Yeah, but you'll have to remove that E
for your
headline to work so that he's a cook.
So, you know, I haven't, I mean, of course, I know lots of Sam Cooke hits, and I was actually surprised as I'm going through it, like, oh, that's Sam Cooke too. Oh, that's Sam Cooke.
Yeah, Twisting the Night Away, Cupid.
Don't know much about history.
Yep. I mean, yeah, crazy amount.
You Send Me, is that him too?
Yep, You Send Me is him. A lot of hit-making power there.
Yeah. quite a career in 8 years. But, you know, it was a pleasure to kind of sit down with an entire album and, you know, not only appreciate his songwriting, but just that voice, you know, is unique and I think influential.
Yeah, I mean, in listening to this, I was hearing Michael Jackson quite a bit, just in terms of the way he uses vibrato and stuff like that. It felt like Michael Jackson was inspired, influenced by that vocal style on his softer songs.
Yeah, I was thinking about Otis Redding, and I mean, they're similar, but I think Otis Redding is a little more, or a little less smooth or something. I think Cook has, he's still emotive, but he's got like a certain smoothness to his voice, whereas like Redding is often kind of, it almost seems like he's crying or something like that when he's singing. Anyway, well, let's hear another cut. This is Another Saturday Night.
Another Saturday Night that I ain't got nobody. I got some money cause I just got paid. Now how I wish I had some.
Yeah, just that little grit in his voice, but it's still lilty and smooth. It's not forced.
Yep.
So that's one of Sam Cooke's classic hits, written during a tour in the UK when he found himself lonely and frustrated about not being able to meet people. The single was released in 1963 and captures humor and frustration of a man with everything going for him except a date on a Saturday night. And I think that's kind of a funny choice. Usually, artists want to look like the suave, debonair guy, not the guy that can't get a date.
Yep.
I think that's probably very relatable to an audience in 1963. And yeah, so I've always liked that song just because it's so relatable and everybody's had that moment when they're like, man, I'm home alone. What, you know, I wish I had a date or whatever. Clickbait headline I came up with for this album: Heartbreak, Hope, and Revolution. Ain't That Good News became Sam Cooke's boldest statement.
Some bold flavors from the Cook.
Yeah, there you go. God. Chef's kiss. So yeah, his blend of silky smoothness and emotional power and an effortless delivery, conveying a wide range of emotions from joy and hope, heartache and despair, all within the same album, as well as a masterpiece song like A Change Is Gonna Come that is culturally significant now and probably forever. It's really amazing. I mean, I'd never listened to, I think I've listened to like collections of Sam Cooke songs. I have not indulged in a full album before. Mm-hmm. And this was definitely a really good one. I'll have to listen to some of the earlier records, but man, what a way to say goodbye with some of his greatest songs. So
yeah, and it is kind of in that it's still kind of that pre-album era, you know, when people start making, you know, cohesive pieces. But this almost works like one.
It's yes, I would say it's close. It's close enough to, I would count it for sure.
Yeah, some other standouts on the album, you know, Good Times, which is, I think that was another hit. You know, it's a kind of a nostalgic piece written by Cook.
Yeah.
Meet Me at Mary's Place is like a gospel, another gospel sounding track. Tennessee Waltz is actually a country song that he kind of redid, sort of borrowing from Ray Charles.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the Riddle song? When I saw that title, I'm like, oh boy, this is going to suck, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it's kind of
fun. It's a folk song. Yeah, it's a folk song given the Sam Cooke treatment. I mean, again, in this period, records were also quite short.
Mm-hmm.
So this just kind of flies by and you're ready for another listen.
Yeah. So if you, you know, I think if you really want to get a comprehensive view of Sam Cooke's songwriting and vocal talents, you should check out his final album, Ain't That Good News, from 1964.
All right, before we get to Don's deep question, why don't we hear from our friend Jess over at Music Notes with Jess.
Hi, I'm Jessica Ann Katina. I've always loved music and surround myself with it every day. I've sung in choirs, took digital musical classes in college, and used to work in radio. To further share my knowledge and experience with others, I created this podcast, Music Notes with Jess, in 2019. I'm so fortunate of the listener growth and hearing back from some of the celebs I discussed in past episodes. That's why now I'm ready to expand. So let's have fun taking weekly music notes of throwbacks, modern hits, and media. Thank you. Talk to you soon on Music Notes with Jess.
I hope she was playing that bass herself. Yeah. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, you should definitely check out Music Notes with Jess. I mean, she focuses on a lot of area that we're probably weak on. So a lot of like your modern hits and pop. We got to have her on the show sometime. Next time we do Dua Lipa.
The next time. The first time. All right, let's get to that question.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Well, it's time for Deep Questions by Don. So we're talking about the last albums from great artists. What are some things you wish were the last to come? So I get films, music, video games. I don't know.
Yeah, if Andy were here, he would say Metallica's "Injustice for All," and that there should be no more Metallica records
before they sold out.
So for me, I mean, a lot of times it's movie franchises like Weekend at Bernie's. Not sure that film is necessary by itself, but it has taken on a cult classic thing. Yeah. It is a stupid idea. But why Weekend at Bernie's 2?
I don't even
not necessary.
What was the premise for that one? Did they like dig them up? Or?
I don't know. I don't want to know. I think I started it and couldn't do it. But yeah.
Like, how does that happen time, twice?
Yeah. So in that case, should have ended at the one thing.
Kind of a classic pick, probably a cliched one, Godfather. So like Godfather 1 and 2 are considered classic films, right? On those lists of the greatest of all time, they're often in the top 10. But Godfather 3 is just like I want to like it just to be contrarian, but I can't.
It's okay. It
doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right. It's one of those things where can you separate it from what came previously? And I think that's kind of what we're talking about with final albums of artists or band or whatever. It's supposed to close the book.
I feel like Al Pacino, like he became that. Once he did Scent of a Woman, he just became that character.
Yeah. Michael Corleone. Hoo-ah.
I'm just getting warmed up. Anyway, what do you wish was the last of a series? Let us know. Hit us up on Instagram or Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
That's the sound of the police. Not those police. The influential English rock band formed in London in 1977, featuring Sting on lead vocals and bass, Slap at a Bass, Andy Summers on guitar, and Stuart Copeland on drums. Now, they almost came up on our drummer episode because Stuart Copeland is considered one of the finest drummers of all time. They blend rock elements with punk, reggae, jazz, and became globally popular in the 70s and 80s. They were named The Police by drummer Stuart Copeland, who thought it was a striking and attention-grabbing name. They were trying to be a punk band to make their way into the music industry in Britain at the time where punk was king. So I think they chose a name that would get people's eyes on it. Plus, it was short, easy to remember. Mm-hmm. The band was at the forefront of the second British invasion in the U.S., despite disbanding in 1986, officially. But we're going to talk about their final album, Synchronicity, from June of 1983, fifth and final studio album. Tensions in the band were at an all-time high. They all pretty much hated each other, barely spoke to each other. And it's a genre-bending masterpiece that mixes all those things, new wave, pop, and punk, but with philosophical and emotional themes, making it a little more mature than your standard pop music at the time. So why don't we get into the big hit song off the album, Every Breath You Take. I can't help but think of Biggie when I, because they used this to build that song about I'll Be Missing You. Mm-hmm. So that's a testament to the power of the sound of this song.
Yeah. An underrated part of that song, I think, is just the guitar part. It's like so subtle, but it's just so clean, and it just really just frames the song. I think Summers is like a great guitarist, but I think he really holds back and is really more focused on the composition and less about showing off.
He was a established guitarist before The Police. He was a little older than them, like 10 years older than the other members, and had been in psychedelic bands in the 60s and 70s. And Eric Burdon and all that stuff. So he definitely had more chops than were allowed in this particular format, mm-hmm. but what he did was significant. The song was huge. So Sting wrote it after his divorce, and it's dripping with jealousy and possessiveness. Do people really misinterpret the lyrics? I mean, I was a kid when this came out, and I thought it was creepy, and I knew that something was wrong. I just felt it. I knew that this was a bad situation.
Right. An unhealthy obsession.
People really thought it was a love song?
Dear Casey, could you please
really
dedicate every breath you take? Yeah. Yeah, I think it ended up being a wedding song and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, then. So, yeah, why don't we get into one of the other tracks? It's not the title track. It's kind of the title track. Title track is Synchronicity. Is Synchronicity 1 the title track? The opening track?
Yeah. Then, so this is the sequel to the title track.
Synchronicity 2. You know, when I first was listening to this record as a kid, the kick in the crotch caught my ear, and every time I listen to the album, that is something I look forward to for some reason. The song is a mix of domestic drama and the Loch Ness Monster, which, you know, pretty standard. Sting uses Carl Jung's theory of synchronicity to tie two seemingly unrelated events together, a man's miserable daily routine and a mythical creature emerging from the Scottish Loch. Yeah, it's cinematic. It's got personal turmoil, but surreal imagery. So it's very Sting.
Yeah. Although it really, I feel like it's the most rockin' Police tune.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of their early stuff was upbeat and kind of punky, but it as far as like a kind of a straightforward rock song, I think this is, you know, this is the one.
I agree. Well, and the video like is Mad Max looking future stuff. I always kind of thought of this as the most metal song the Police were ever able to put together. And there's more guitar on that one as well. The clickbait headline I came up with for this album, with hate-fueled art, the Police's internal strife created the brilliant chaos of Synchronicity and took the venom out of Sting.
Ooh, that's a good line there.
Thanks. Yeah, I was proud of that one. Yeah, so I think this kind of set the stage. I mean, Sting was kind of writing most of the stuff, trying to make sure the world knew that he was writing most of the stuff, thus annoying and pissing off his bandmates. Constant questioning each other on this, you know, oh, you should come in after me, or mine should be turned up louder, and all that stuff. And I think this was the setup for Sting's solo career. And there's this one last burst of chaotic creativity in the band before he went out into the world with a more, even not that the Police were edgy, but a more neutered adult contemporary jazzy vibe that Sting took forward into the mid 80s. All right, let's get into what might be my favorite song on the album. At least I always really liked the imagery when I was a youth. This one is King of Pain.
We went from the King of Soul to the King of Pain. Yeah, that's the stuff. I think that's my favorite track, too. Probably my favorite Police song. So that one's written by Sting, again, after his separation from his wife. I got a quote from him here. I conjured up symbols of pain and related them to my soul. A black spot on the sun struck me as being a very painful image, and I felt that was my soul up there on the sun.
So. Yeah. Well, the line, the little black spot on the sun today, is the same old thing as yesterday. I think because of the simplicity of the lyric, it was easy to relate to even as a young person.
Yeah, good point. What I love about the song is that it, you know, kind of starts out quiet, and then it's just like they just keep adding elements, you know, until the, you know, kind of the more rockin' part. But apparently that's not how the song was originally. Like it was a full mix. And so like during the mixing stage, they figured out that if they took away elements, you know, it made it much more powerful and climactic, I think.
Well, Ed Sting's vocal on this one is probably the most emotive.
Mm.
Yeah. Like the always be king of pain. Like it felt, it was a little less subdued, I guess.
That fella can emote. All right. Well, my clickbait headline for Synchronicity is "The Police Wrap Us Around Their Fingers One Last Time with Pop Accessibility and Artistic Ambition." So, yeah, you know, it is a good blend of stuff that just sounds great, but is also a bit pretentious and challenges you. You know, there are certainly challenging moments on the album. It's different from, I mean, it's similar to Ghost in the Machine, but it's different from, you know, their first three albums.
Yes.
Not as much of that reggae sound, or, you know, that blend of reggae and punk, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I think this is what they wanted to be at the beginning, but couldn't because they needed to make their way into the music scene. That's why they did the whole "we're punks" thing, which I did finger quotes, by the way, folks. I don't really think they were ever punk.
No. They were too good at their instruments.
Yeah. Well, they were new wave.
Yeah.
And looking for a way into the and the British music scene, and then of course they broke through there and then broke through in America.
Yeah.
It's my favorite Police album for sure.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's, in terms of songs, I think it has the best songs. I feel like maybe there is Regatta de Blanc, I think, might be my favorite, just because I love that sound. I love that early, you know, bouncy, you know, Police sound. But yeah, I think they kind of evolved from being a sound to being songwriters.
Right.
You know. Yeah, you know, I'm reminded, I mean, we talked about Rush, you know, last week. We talked about Rush last week. That's three guys that are just, you know, experts at what they do. And I think you have the same thing with the Police.
Except with Rush, there's the unity, the brotherhood.
Yeah.
And I think part of what makes this interesting is you can, especially once you know about it, you can hear that they're not synchronous. You can hear that the sounds are sometimes at odds with each other, which makes it an interesting listen. I think we kind of discount and forget about that the sound of this album is also the sound of discord.
Yeah. Another thing that's interesting is that during the recording of most of the tracks, they're all like in separate spaces. So supposedly Sting was in the control room with his bass, and Summers is in the main studio, and Copeland's like upstairs on the drums. So, and I don't know if that was more a sonic decision or like an interpersonal dynamics decision.
I think it was to keep a drumstick out of Sting's eyeball.
I could see where he'd be kind of a punchable guy.
Yeah. Some of the old interviews and stuff, they all seem a little punchable at times. But yeah, like Murder by Numbers is a track you'll find if you're listening to it on a streaming service. It was not on the original vinyl LP. I think it was on the cassette and CD. It's kind of a bonus track.
Yeah, I think it was the B-side to Every Breath You Take single, okay. I think, as well.
So Synchronicity isn't just a final album. It's a culmination of the Police's artistic evolution and captures that tension and creativity that we talked about, which ultimately tore them apart. And it solidified their legacy, showcasing their ability to turn all that mess into one of the greatest albums of the 80s, which is why I'm going to nominate this for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. By nominating it, I'm implying that, yes, I would like it in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. I think it's their finest album. It's my favorite. And I think it really represents a chunk of the 80s that they had a huge influence on musically.
Yeah, I think it's a great album. One knock I have on it, I would say, unlike other albums in the Hall of Fame, I think it doesn't feel as much like a cohesive artistic statement. I'm not sure that the track sequencing is ideal. I guess there was a lot of argument over the track sequencing. Similar to the Sam Cooke record, I think they agreed that they would put all the quieter tunes, you know, on one disc. But yeah, we should just mention that Mother track. I suspect it might be one of the most skipped songs of all time.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It feels like it should be on Pink Floyd's The Wall or something.
I think it would have, I mean, if you put it at the end of the album or something, it might have worked.
But, you know, it's about the songs, really, you know, like Wrapped Around Your Finger and the Synchronicities. And
they're all good songs.
And all of that. Yeah, I think this nomination is more about the sound of the band at this point, where they had honed all of their skills. So the sequencing, perhaps we could question, but you can't question the quality of the tunes.
Right, and even the song like "Oh My God" is sort of a throwback to the earlier Police songs.
Yeah,
even mentioned it has like the lyrics from like "Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic" in it. And stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Synchronicity belongs in the Hall of Fame.
All right, all that said.
Okay. Well, so I guess we'll have to wait for Andy's vote and the audience's vote.
If anyone disagrees, and please let us know on the socials. So please do check out The Police, Synchronicity, their final album.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, we spent the week with two excellent final albums. Did you have a chance to dig anything else?
I certainly did. Crypt Sermon's The Stygian Rose. I'm not sure how to say it.
Huh.
Stygian. Crypt Sermon is a epic doom band from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, formed in 2013. I did talk about their 2019 album, The Ruins of Fading Light, on the Album Nerds podcast, and this is their follow-up. I'd kind of forgotten about them because it's been 5 years. Why don't we check out a little bit of Heavy is the Crown of Bone.
Heavy is the Crown of Bone.
Yeah, so, they're kind of new wave of British heavy metal-y. There's some, on this particular album, they're doing more twin guitar stuff like Iron Maiden and bands like that. But I just like the Dungeon and Dragon-y type stuff in metal.
Yeah.
A winged stag, not winged, winged. It just sounds, like stuff from Yore, which I think is kind of the idea. So yeah, they're fun to listen to and high quality stuff too. Good musicianship.
Vocally kind of sounded like Dave Mustaine.
Yeah.
A little bit.
So you've not experienced the Crypt Sermon.
I'm going to check it out.
Give it a go. Yeah. All right, and next up is something I picked up on vinyl. This one is by Mecco. It's music inspired by Star Wars and other galactic funk. Why don't we listen to a little bit of Star Wars themed Cantina Band? So, bear in mind, Star Wars was so freaking huge in the late 70s and all, into the early 80s, and the disco craze was going, so this Mecco musician Domenico Minardo released this at the time, and it was a disco reinterpretation of the score, and this was like on the Billboard like number one track, and people were probably disco dancing to this song.
Yeah, it seems like that was a trend, because they did it to Beethoven, right, with Beethoven's Fifth.
Yeah, I was at the record store, and my buddy Benji, who owns it, he put it on in the store, and I'm like, oh my God, that sounds somewhat familiar from childhood. So I picked it up, and it's, not something I'm going to spin regularly, but it's fun to have.
You had to have it.
Yep. All right. What you digging, my friend?
Well, since we were, getting prepared to discuss The Police, I ended up watching a documentary from 2012 called Can't Stand Losing You, Surviving the Police, which is a documentary directed by Andy Grieve, based on Andy Summers' memoirs. So, if you want to experience a little bit of the turmoil and the stress that went along with that band, I think that documentary was really effective. But one cool thing about it was, it turns out Andy Summers was taking photographs on all their tours and stuff like that. So those photos were really prominent in the documentary.
We watched it too. Me and my wife watched it and couldn't finish it just because they all seemed like such assholes.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you want more, I was going to say taste of asshole. That would be. if you want to experience more of that, Stuart Copeland just released what he called The Police Diaries. So he was keeping a journal throughout that time period. So, that's an interesting thing to check out as well, that's police related. But moving away from The Police, Post Malone, you've probably heard about this, his most recent album, F1 Trillion, is basically it's a country album, right? And it features collaborations with the stars of country, Blake Shelton, Morgan Wallen, Dolly Parton, Lainey Wilson. So here's a song he does with Luke Combs called Guy for That. He actually does two with Luke Combs.
Post Malone does have a unique ability to chameleon himself into other sounds, including I've heard him do like Nirvana songs and stuff, and he actually is able to pull it off. You wouldn't know by looking at him.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't say I'm in love with this album, but overall, it's just 12 nice kind of pop country songs. It's as good as anything you'll hear on country radio, so it's worth checking out.
Cool, will do.
Well, what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, also on our website, albumnerds.com.
it will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about the time on the show when I'm reminded of a passage from Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities. This happens to me all the time, Don, I gotta tell you. It is a far, far better thing to do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest that I go to than I have ever known. With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, the Wheel of Musical Discovery, and see what we'll be discovering next time.
As you know, music and lyrics can be a very powerful combination and have a great impact on the listeners and the world around them. The lyrics sometimes take center stage. Next time, you will explore albums where powerful lyrics have been the driving force behind their success or legacy.
That could be a challenge, Don, finding an album that is carried by powerful lyrical content. So I'm up to the challenge for you.
Let's do it.
You can do it!
Don't forget, you can suggest topics for The Wheel on our website, albumnerds.com, as well as vote on any ongoing Album Nerds Hall of Fame and nominations.
All right, what album demonstrates the power of lyrics? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you once again for joining us on the Album Nerds podcast. We'll catch you next time with some earth-shattering lyrics.
Those are some fucking great lyrics, man. Is that Rayman Zarek? I'll send an SOS to Andy. I'll send... Is he going to get
mine? Yeah, you might need a message in a bottle,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the hell is he?
To reach the man. He's still on safari, so I miss you, Andy. We'll catch y'all next week. See ya.
I'll be missing you.